He has to pay the iron price.
He has to pay the iron price.
He'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn Payne the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar, Dargaris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by. Valar, Morghulis, all men must die.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by baldmove.com. We're the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
How much do you hate George R.R. Martin right now, Jim?
God, I hate him. God, I wanted Oberon to win that.
And he did.
He did. He did. He just got cocky. Well, he didn't get cocky. He got vindictive.
Yes. What he wanted out of that fight was different from what Tyrion wanted out of that fight.
Sure. Now.
But Jesus Christ, how brutal.
It was insanely brutal. Definitely the most brutal thing I've seen on this show, which is probably the most brutal thing I've seen on TV, period.
Stands to reason.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, educate me about the rules of trial by combat, because Tywin seems to think, though both of them died pretty clearly, that the first one to die loses?
Well, I can either confirm or deny the death of either
Jesus.
Combatant.
Okay, so the mountain might have lived through a spear through the chest.
But I guess neither yielded. And then that's the thing. Neither yielded.
Sure.
And
Oberon's definitely
Oberon
dead.
Was definitely dead before the mountain was.
Sure.
And thus, Tyrion or Tywin called it the way Tywin wanted to call it.
Sure. I just think he was a little overzealous calling it in the favor of himself.
Oh, no. The crowd would definitely be unhappy. This is a split decision. Very controversial.
All right. I mean, we won't know, I guess, that because you won't tell us until
feels like the fix
next
is
week.
In. All the Westerosi sports books were in uproar.
The amount of money that Tyrion lost on that battle, too. I mean, he had so much riding on that.
I tell you what, I thought it was really badass. One of the few times where what I imagined happened on the page lined up almost exactly. And the way Oberyn fought, mm-hmm. the general tenor of the contest, the crowd reaction, his dialogue, everything was just spot fucking on. And I could not, I mean, I could be happier if they rewrote the thing so Oberyn won. But barring that, I don't know that I could be happier with it. And this is why it took me a long time to really get in the Feast, because I just felt like I had my heart ripped out three different times by this current book, Storm of Swords. It wasn't just Rob. Every single time I got my fanboy heart behind somebody else, nope, fuck you. He's going to die too. It just felt like he was fucking with me after a while.
Yeah, so it's crazy how much I lose as a viewer in this one outcome. Because not only am I losing a character who I've grown to appreciate, if not enjoy watching, Oberyn, I potentially lose Tyrion, who is easily my favorite character in the show, still.
He's definitely right up there.
So, you let me down, Oberyn. You let me down.
And that's the other, I think, interesting thing about Game of Thrones, is Oberyn won handily.
Yeah.
But managed to lose because he didn't put his boot to the guy's throat when he could have. Because he was pursuing justice over just ruthless pragmatism. He's a flashier Ned Stark.
Okay. I guess. And I don't think Ned Stark has nearly as much sex as Oberyn did.
With nearly as many people.
Yeah.
So let's...
The other thing, I don't want to move on from this quite yet.
Okay. It's clearly the main event.
Obviously. And we will have... halfway through it, I was like, oh my God, is this even going to happen this episode?
Dude, so much shit happened this episode that I actually had a brief, as a podcaster, flash of panic that I had spoiled the title. I was like, shit. I said this is the Mountain and the Viper. Maybe that happens next week. And then I looked at the TV and I'm like, there's still 20 minutes. I guess they could fit all this in.
Yeah.
But this was a jam-packed episode. Tons of crazy stuff.
They cut
happened.
It really close, and they didn't even go to Tyrion until like 15 minutes before the episode was over. And then he had this long monologue about this moron.
I was freaking out. I was freaking out because I was looking.
I was worried.
And I'm like, well, maybe it's one of those things where it's like goes an hour and 6 minutes. And I hit, you know, the button that showed me, and I'm like, no, actually, it's short. Oh, shit. I've spoiled this thing, and people are going to be on my ass for, you know. I started rationalizing. I was like, well, maybe I fucked it up, but they knew it was going to be the Mountain versus the Viper, didn't they? I mean, we knew that last week. And so, yeah, nothing felt rushed.
No, it didn't. The one other thing I did want to talk about as it relates to this battle is you couldn't really have Oberyn win, I think, because if he does, Tywin is in mortal danger, right? I mean, if the Mountain says, like, points and says, that's the guy who ordered it, Oberyn's just going to go up and kill him right there on the spot, probably. I mean, maybe he's smarter than that. He would kind of, you know, play his cards close to the vest and then wait for his opportunity, but you kind of know the fate of Tywin. Now, that's totally up in the air.
Yeah, I don't. Again, if you want to play Westerosi, what if? What would he do? Would he just pick a spear up and wing it right at Tywin's?
That would be a terrible
pinning
idea.
To his chair? You know, but he is pretty hot-blooded. I don't know. But,
Well, he was hot-blooded. Now his blood is
did
cooling
you think,
on the
so
pavement.
What was your thoughts? Let me back up and unpack this. You're watching the episode. Before the episode started, what was your gut telling you who'd win?
Oberyn.
100%, really?
100%, yeah.
Holy shit.
Because there's
no
use for the Mountain. The Mountain is just a big oaf with a sword.
Right.
Oberyn is an interesting character who is the leader of a fucking kingdom.
Yeah.
Would think he'd stick around more than
George Martin just can't wait to throw guys like that away. Look at this beautiful thing I've crafted.
Right?
Crumble, crumble. I actually think George Martin is the moron. This is actually a commentary on George Martin's authorial style. That there is no rhyme or reason. He's a thuck, thuck, thuck with his stone and killing these
Oberyn's
countless numbers of these beetles. Yeah. By the way, that passage not in the book. They invented a long-ass scene between Jaime and Tyrion, and I was sitting there as I was watching this like, what the fuck? Is this just filler? It doesn't seem like they need filler, am I supposed to? But I started thinking, like, maybe this is a poking... a little fun at Martin's expense.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, not like, you know, severe mockery, but just kind of like a wink. Sure. But it went on for a long time for that.
It did, and I'm sure it has a lot of meaning, you know, as far as Tyrion's character goes. I'm going to have to watch it again.
Sure.
Because I was just like, okay, get on to the fight.
Yeah, this is just the instant take. We just watched this episode 5 minutes ago, and you know, even though I knew what was coming, like, I still got this rush of adrenaline and, mm-hmm. you know, and then the sick feeling in my stomach, especially since it was so gruesome.
It was really
Jesus,
gruesome.
That was something else.
The teeth coming out was one thing, and then he grabs his face.
Yeah, and then he is like, wow, he's really getting those thumbs in the eye sockets. Yeah. Wow, they're really doing this right by the book. And then,
and I still thought he was going to, like, pull out some Obi-Wan shit and win the battle, even with his eyes bleeding or something.
Yeah.
Like, kick him in the dick and roll out from under him. No.
Now, once the mountain
his head
had
exploded.
Him, once the mountain had him, is all over. So many other things happened. Let me pick one at random: the sack of Moat Cailin.
That's whatever Riverlands that they wanted to take, right?
Yep. Okay. Ramsay Bolton sent Theon Reek Greyjoy up there to do his dirty work. Promised the guy safe passage.
Another gruesome scene.
This is very Genghis Khan. And that, how many times can you? Yeah. Can you promise safe passage and then flay every living motherfucker and get away with it? Ramsay's going to test that theory, apparently.
If you kill them all, no one will ever know,
I guess. That's true. I guess that's true.
So it's too late.
Yeah, that was pretty... This was a really gruesome episode.
It was.
Bring on some... I could use some sex position to clear my mouth of all this. What did you think of Theon's near breakdown? I was very intrigued by the way that was going, where... the Ironborn that was actually in control of the castle, the sickly one, they got a splitting headache. It seemed like when he was telling Theon off that Theon was going into full mental breakdown mode, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I don't know. I was more concerned about the blood the guy spat on his face, because that seems dangerous. A guy with a plague spits in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Especially his blood.
And he's going to go give Ramsay a bath, and then Bolton. Then he's going to give Roos a bath.
Yeah, that can't be good.
It's just a big scrubbing chain. You know, one guy scrubbing each other's back in the bathtub.
I guess. And Reek's in the back. He doesn't get scrubbed.
What do you think the tender father-son scene between Ramsay and Roos?
Unfortunately, I liked it. I mean, he deserved the reward, right?
What's deserve in the hands of a vicious beetle-killing god?
Yeah, no, I agree. But in context, I think, you know, he did everything that Roose wanted him to.
Yes. Do you think... Never mind, let me go on a different track. This episode, I think, and they all look like $1 million, but this looked like $10 million.
Yeah.
That on-location shots of them and him saying, like, you know, look, Ramsay, everything the light touches is our kingdom. and he's like, what about that shadowy Simba. Place? Oh, that's our Dreadfort. It's the best place. I thought that just was phenomenal. That they scouted that location, found that location, hauled everyone's ass out to that location and filmed it. It just paid off because it was fucking epic.
Yeah, it looked fantastic.
The scene of the trial by combat where they were showing the mountain and Oberyn, and they panned up and you could see the Red Keep and just, you know, how massive that was in the background. That was all CGI, but it looked amazing.
Sure.
I thought it was a great-looking episode. Anything we want to talk more about the Boltons, or should we get to what's going on in the Eyrie?
I'll tell you what's a great-looking episode.
Still not rating a location. That Moat Cailin does, but the Eyrie, they're...
We've been there for four episodes now, and they don't give a shit. I'll tell you what looks amazing.
What's that?
What's her face?
Sansa?
No. Come on. Danny's handmaiden.
Oh.
Or sidekick,
Miss
whatever
Andy.
She is now.
Sure.
Yeah, Miss Sandy. Wow. All right. Grey Worm, going after that.
So what do you think about Grey Worm? You think he's got a meat or two veggies? Do you think they missed... And you know,
so it makes a lot of sense that they
assembly
would not...
line where they just cut the scrot and the dick... They just missed one.
Whoops.
Just circumcised it. Well, he's sorry. It's like a conveyor belt of little boys coming by.
And then they never noticed it in the 20 years since then? I don't think so. I think that they probably would not take off the testicles, right?
No.
Because that's what produces
the testosterone
which makes you a badass warrior, which gives you muscle. Like, All the things that you need to be a badass warrior come from that, basically.
But and they made a point of that this guy's got a slender build, and they even talked about that in the scene where the slaver's kind of like talking about them as pieces of meat, you know, that the Unsullied are not physically imposing specimens.
Really?
They just have iron will discipline and superior tactics and whatnot.
That's also according to this show, I don't know how realistic this show takes these sort of like physiological things, but according to the show, it seems like that's also the source of any desire.
Sure.
So I'm very confused.
I'm super confused too.
What's down there at this point?
Yep. Especially since the episode itself is...
We should send Ramsey in. Let him find out.
Let him get to the bottom of this. He's the expert at...
Oh, you guys did this all wrong.
Yeah, this is a botched job. You left half a testicle, three quarters of a dick. This man can still want a woman. Give me your blade. No, I'm super confused. I don't know where they're going. If I had a spoiler section on this, I would love to talk to the spoiler-loving listeners about what they think. I got a few ideas, mm-hmm. but no, honestly, I'm very confused. This obviously we talked about this before. This situation is not in the book, so I really am kind of in the dark.
Okay,
but I'll be very disappointed if it turns out that these Unsullied have testicles, because what is the point of cutting off a dude's dick? I don't even know, because I've often wondered that. Like, if you lose your dick and not your testicles, you just want to have sex, and it's like you've got the phantom cock syndrome.
I assume so, yeah.
And it's like an itch you can never scratch. That would be terrible.
That would just enrage their soldiers, and
you would think so.
You would think they would turn on them.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think if you want a soldier without desire and kind of like an automaton, you'd take the whole thing.
You Varus them up.
Yeah.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Let's talk about the Eerie.
Okay.
Somehow we got off onto what's going on in Marine before we got to the Eerie. Oh, yeah, because Miss Sandy.
Yeah.
What did you think? Sansa Stark, masterclass in lying. She's been taking the mail order series. What did you think of that? Pretty powerful stuff. Did you buy it? Did you buy the Lords of the Vale lining up behind Baelish in this circumstance?
Yeah, I bought that they bought it.
Okay.
I think her performance was really good. Really good. So not surprising that they bought it. I'm just kind of surprised that she went along with Baelish. I'm not totally certain why she did at this point.
What do you think she's trying to do here?
it seems like she's trying to replace her aunt.
She even kind of looked a little Liza.
Yeah. Like a, that black dress
coming
down the stairs.
A less creepy version of Liza. But she's still kind of a very much a little kid, so...
Sure.
I don't know where, you know, on a Chris Hansen scale we are with this stuff.
I assume she'd have to get rid of Baelish. She'd have to get rid of Robin, who are, you know, husband and direct descendant.
So what do you think about I mean, Robin's got, looks like he's on his way out. I mean,
yeah,
Peter's got everybody saying, ship him out. Yeah, have him on a tour of the Vale.
Good.
It's dangerous out there. He needs to get his head knocked around and have suffer some unfortunate hunting accidents. Is that where they're going with that? Or
Maybe. I think it would be, however he dies, it's equally as satisfying as him going out the moon door.
Are you surprised that Sandor made it through the Vale?
This episode or at all? Yes.
No, just this at all.
No.
Where do you think this is going? Because Arya found it hysterical that he shows up 3 days after her aunt got...
Well, I mean, they've been trekking across the Seven Kingdoms.
No.
Trying to redeem her, and it's just not working. The Hound can't catch a break.
Right.
So that was too perfect. I love that. I don't know. I mean, where this goes from here... I assume they go inside and she meets up with Sansa. I mean, at this point, why wouldn't they go inside?
That's a great question. I don't see anything that would keep them from meeting up now.
This was kind of the Hound's last resort.
Right.
Like, everybody else in your family is dead. I'm going to take you to the last person who gives a shit.
Right.
So, yeah, they've got to go inside and they've got to meet back up. And I don't know that they'll even like each other at this point. I mean, they left on pretty bad terms.
That's true. They were such different people, and now they're more alike than I think either of them would suspect. But, yeah, you'd think that... I don't know. I don't know what would happen if they would meet at this point.
I think you do. I think you just don't want to say.
Mild interesting point, Jim. They're just... honestly, the writing is all over the map. And I'm not going to say which one isn't following the books, which one isn't, except for the one I've already done. But as a book reader, mildly interested in seeing how this is going to come together in the final two episodes. Or if they're going to for the first time, because every other season, they've kind of pulled it together at the end. Like, okay, we've gone off the map, but we're going to everything's going to shrink down to single point, and we're going to get one-to-one parity with what's going on in the books. Maybe this is the first season, since they're going into kind of interleaving the various books, they're going to be like, fuck it. We're going to keep some of this stuff messed up for the long con. Don't know. Moletown got sacked. Yep. Gilly, alive or dead?
Probably alive.
Baby, alive or dead?
Alive. I think they're both alive.
All right. Moletown is the last stop before you get to Castle Black. Looks like we've got a pretty big confrontation coming next episode. You liked Oberon in the last fight. Do you like the Black Brothers? Do you want to condemn him to death and back him right now?
No, I don't want to condemn them to death. I mean, it certainly looks bleak. They're facing, you know, 1,000-to-1 odds here. 1,000 men for every one that they have.
Yep.
It's bad news, but maybe the White Walkers come down. I mean, winter has been coming for 4 years now, so... Mm-hmm. You got to wonder.
That is a long climax.
Yeah, if that army's ever going to hit the wall, I think now is a good time for that to happen.
That would be a mildly interesting clusterfuck if you just had the 100,000 wildlings and 100 Black Brothers and God knows how many White Walkers and Craster babies just all converge. And then the Craster wives get in it for good measure. Yep. They come riding in on giant dire wolves.
Okay.
Looking to do some castrating of their own.
All right.
Have we not touched on anything?
The only thing I thought about while I was watching.
Oh, I know we did
the Sansa scenes. Yeah, we've missed some other stuff, but I want to talk about Sansa before we totally leave that. She revealed her true identity, and everybody seemed to say, "Oh, your secret's safe with us." I don't know if that's actually true. I'm a little worried that there's a spy in the midst there.
Really? You think there might be some backstabbing?
In the same episode where we see Jor-El become outed as a spy, That someone else would be a spy? No, of course not.
I'm mildly interesting. Speaking of Jor-El, Jorah Mormont, yeah, he got out. I mean, this is one of the popular speculations that Tywin was going to fuck around with Dany's head and Dany's chief of staffs by dropping the information that she had a former spy in her midst.
Seems like he did it.
Did you buy... Because when I was reading this in the books, I was very much of two minds. I was like, yeah, this is all correct, but... Mm. And I tried to weigh which side did I come down on. If I was in Dany's position, would I forgive Jorah or would I exile him? What did you... What was your thoughts when you were watching this scene? Or did you even have any kind of internal conflict as a viewer?
Yeah, I did. I had an internal conflict, A, because this was coming from season one stuff. Like, I don't fucking understand, just straight up, why it's a big deal that she had Khal Drogo's baby, that she was pregnant, and that seemed to be the big thing that Jor-El was telling King's Landing.
Well...
Like, who gives a fuck?
So she's the last... Those are the last two living descendants of the Targaryen clan...
Okay.
That he deposed, not deposed, disposed, whatever. He kicked the fuck out.
Okay.
And the fact that she's married now to a very powerful warlord in Essos.
But one who's afraid of the water and won't get in a boat.
And has a child. I mean, there's now a lineage. There's this. It's kind of like, you know, you got pretenders to the throne and now they're multiplying. And the fact that she's came of age, I think that's what kind of set them off and wanted them.
It's the seed of a threat, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just don't know why they made such a big deal about that. I guess I'd have to go watch it again to really understand it. So I was thinking about, like, do I have a problem with this being kind of revealed out of the blue? Because it seemed like it just came out of nowhere. Like, he's been advising her really well, I thought, the entire time.
Sure.
And yet he's a spy. Those two things seem to conflict, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, he's not currently a spy. He stopped being a spy literally the time he...
Did he? Do we know that? Like, once a spy, always a spy, right?
So you really do think that... I mean, do you really think that he's been a spy this whole time?
No, I don't. I actually think that he did switch allegiances at some point, but who knows?
Okay.
It's George R. R. Martin.
Also, Varys himself, the two episodes ago, or maybe it was last episode, the week off has fucked with me, said that they haven't heard from Jorah since the failed assassination attempt, which would back up. I mean, there's no reason to lie in a small council chambers. It seems like that he has stopped, you know, put aside all that, especially since he had the pardon. He could have... Mm-hmm. Let her die and leave and got what he wanted. I think that it's legit.
I think you're right, yeah. The fact that he saved her life.
And I think that it's just the fact that this... You asked me, it's like, so why was it a big deal that she's off having kids? You got to remember that Robert Baratheon fucking hated Targaryens because the Targaryen prince kidnapped his beloved, went on, in his opinion, a raping spree... caused this whole fucking war and end up killing her. She died as a result of this. And he just hates Targaryens with almost it's like a crazy thing with him. So the fact that they're out there having kids, not only is a threat to his power, but also it's a very deeply personal thing. I think you're seeing the other side of this with Jorah. Like, it's not that he was a spy, because it's like, okay, If you look at outside of Dany's perspective, Dany's 13, 14, 15, however old girl she's supposed to be in the series. And, you know, she's with her brother. They call the Beggar King because they have no wealth. They have no power. They literally go to house and beg and sell their trinkets and their crowns and all their stuff to try to
marry each other off. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're in a disgraced kind of, you know, Han Solo-ish Westerosi knight, why wouldn't you do this? And then the fact that you would turn around just on the force of this girl's personality might, you know, actually be a strong indicator that this guy could be trusted, and also that you're badass and you're awesome and you've won this man over. But he was working for Robert, the usurper, the one that is directly responsible in her mind for murdering her entire family and for putting her in this position. So with her, again, it's very personal.
Yeah, that's a lot of background stuff you got to know that I don't have a grasp
on. That's what
on.
She was spitting in rapid fire. When you go back and watch this, you'll see her say that, you know, it's not only were you betraying me, but you betrayed him to this guy. This fucking guy, you know?
Yeah, they that say that insult. In the show, but I don't know how much of that I'm supposed to know just from the show.
I don't know either. I've read all the books and seen all the shows a million times. Yeah. It's like, they all kind of run together for me.
And I have a terrible memory, so it could have been in there. It might not have been. Who knows?
Professional podcasters, ladies and gentlemen. So is there anything? I think we've covered probably in more detail than we should. We've got the full cast coming up Tuesday. Anything else you want to say before we wish everyone a good night to cry to sleep under giant pillows over the latest savior of Westeros that has been snuffed out too short?
No, I'm good.
He promised his paramour that he wouldn't leave her.
Well, he broke that promise. Not much consequence there, though.
So, we will be back here Tuesday. We'd love to hear your feedback. Send it to GameOfThrones@baldmove.com. Of course, you can join our discussion threads on Facebook. Please, please, no book spoilers on the public forum threads. On Facebook.com/baldmove, you can tweet stuff at Jim. Please, no spoilers, book spoilers, because he's unsullied.
Still have my balls though.
Half a dick and three quarters of testicle.
Still got 8 inches and half and both my balls.
Semi sullied. I have no. I was laughing. I didn't hear whether you flattered or besmirched yourself. But anyway, you can do that at game at Bald Move at Bald Move literally on Twitter.com. Jesus, let's get out of here. We'll see you guys in a couple days. Until then, I'm Aaron
and I'm Reek.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn, Payne, the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm bound. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar, Dargaris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by.